Section 5. Blue Team. Chapter 23. 1350 hours. November 3, 2552. Military calendar. Sol System. Planet Earth. Caribbean Ocean. Near Cuban coast. Blue Team. Spartans 104, 058, and 043 sat on the blood tray of the Pelican as it roared over the ocean, skimming a few meters over the water. The aft hatch was lowered, jammed open because a plasma shot had melted the hydraulics. Fred watched the jets churn the water behind them, happy to be above the water instead of under it. In the last 2 weeks, Blue Team had been deployed on numerous zero-G ops to repel the Covenant ships in orbit over the Earth. They had then been dispatched to Mount Erebus in the Antarctic, where they neutralized a Covenant excavation with a Havoc tactical nuke. They'd been redeployed off the coast of the Yucatan Peninsula for a swim. Covenant forces had been searching the seafloor for something. What precisely? A holy relic? A geological sample? No one knew, and it didn't matter. What mattered was when they got what they wanted. The Covenant then historically glassed the planet to remove any human infestation. Blue Team had stopped both operations. Fred looked over the ocean and wondered how long they could keep the Covenant at bay in space. His gaze dropped to the corrugated floor of the Pelican. It had lived up to its nickname, Blood Tray, stained with splashes of congealed dark red. Good soldiers had died today. On his heads-up display, the TAC map showed the edge of Cuba ahead. Fred exhaled and cleared his mind. They were close to their third target, the Centennial Orbital Elevator. There had been scattered reports that the Covenant had invaded the facility before all contact with COE control had been lost. Fred stood and stretched. Linda and Will rose as well, sensing their brief downtime was over. Linda opened one of the crates they'd obtained from Base Segundo Terra near Mexico City. Within was a new SRS-99C sniper rifle. She disassembled it, cleaned each part, applied graphite lubricant, and reassembled the gun with mechanical precision. She then examined the Oracle N-variant scope that had accompanied the rifle and made micro-adjustments with a fine set of screwdrivers. William tore into the box of ammunition and loaded magazines, sorting them by frag and AP types. Fred opened an egg carrier box and divided up fragmentation and concussion grenades into three satchels. He found an ONI datapad and turned it on. It had new Covenant English translation matrices and the latest ONI intrusion and counter-intrusion software. Updates, courtesy of Cortana. He tossed it into his bag. In the cockpit, Sergeant Laura Smokes Tanner flew while her crew chief, Corporal Jim Higgins, fiddled with the comm, trying to filter through the reports of the action in space and on the ground. Tanner popped a black bubble and continued to chew the contraband tobacco gum so popular with NCO flyers. "So then," Tanner said to Higgins, "in amber clad goes after the damned Covenant battleship as it did an in-atmosphere slipspace jump. Flattened New Mombasa. I don't know what those split-chinned freaks were after, but they sure didn't stick around after they found it. That's all I heard. CENTCOM channels are dropping offline. That can't be good." Fred looked to Linda and Will. Linda made a short lateral cut with her hand, the stay cool gesture. They couldn't worry about the larger strategic picture. They had to stay focused on their part. Secure the orbital elevator and win this war one battle at a time. Fred spied the Cuban coast ahead. Surf and white sands. The Pelican screamed over jungle tangle. 50 kilometers in the distance, a line stretched from ground to clouds. The UNSC Centennial Orbital Elevator, or as the locals called it, Tallo Negro del Maíz, the stalk of black corn. It was 200 years old, antiquated, but one of the few surviving OEs capable of heavy lifting on Earth. In the last 2 weeks, nuclear devices, slated for conversion to peaceful purposes, had been transported to Cuba. Recent actions had depleted the UNSC nuclear stockpile, and these older, low-yield bombs were all they had left. Sergeant Tanner continued, So then, the Covenant fleet really starts to tear into the orbital defenses. It's getting ugly up there. Major skirmishes with the 2nd, 7th, and 16th fleets. Just as long as the plasma doesn't start dropping, Higgins replied. Tanner stopped chewing her gum. Multiple silhouettes ahead. Banshee flyers. Whoa! She craned her head looking up. Fred moved to the cockpit and followed her gaze. Up the orbital elevator, past a whisper haze of clouds, a pair of dots, each a kilometer and a half long Covenant ship, orbited.
What the hell are they doing up there?
Tanner whispered. Covenant orbital support complicated this mission. Ground forces might have aerial support, heavy armor, or artillery, but Covenant didn't need the stalk to transport an invasion force. They just land their ships or use grab beams. Why were they here? Blue Team would have to move in closer before he could discern their motives. Fred studied the radar images.
There's a hole in the Banshee patrol pattern.
He tapped the far edge of the screen.
Put us down here. We'll go in by foot.
Your call,
Tanner said dubiously. She pushed the throttle and the Pelican accelerated, dropping so it now decapitated palm trees.
Make ready for hot drop, Spartans.
She spun the Pelican around and sank into the jungle.
Call if you need a lift, Blue Team. Good hunting.
Fred, Linda, and Will grabbed their gear and jumped out the back, 6 meters to the sandy ground. The Pelican roared away. Fred pointed northeast, and they moved silently through the tropical brush and entered the shadow of Tayo Negro del Maiz. A half kilometer from the elevator complex, the jungle had been cleared and replaced by concrete asphalt and warehouses. Towering freight container cranes stood instead of coconut trees. Fred heard the dull pounding steps of a Covenant Scarab attack platform. He spotted the lumbering behemoth as it crashed through a warehouse, tearing steel walls like tissue paper.
Trouble,
he muttered over team comm.
Opportunity,
Will countered. Linda kept her comments to herself and methodically wrapped the barrel of her new sniper rifle with brown and green rags. She lay in the scrub, powered on her oracle scope, and sighted down its length.
UNSC personnel down, she reported. Thermals cold. All dead. Making out six, no, a dozen Covenant moving in groups of four. Carrying cargo pods. Not elites. Brutes.
Fred paused, remembering the gorilla-like creatures from their op on Unyielding Hierophant. A single brute had wrestled John in his Mjolnir armor, and almost won. Not as bad as facing Covenant hunters, but hunters only came two at a time.
Where are they going?
Fred asked. She shifted her sight.
Elevator. They've got an ascent car half full.
Switch to neutron detector,
Fred suggested. Linda twisted a dial on the oracle scope.
Cargo pods are hot, she confirmed.
Nukes? Will said. Covenant don't use nukes.
They have an edict about using heretic weapons. He was right. Fred had seen elites. Their weapons, depleted of charge, die, rather than touch fully loaded UNSC assault rifles at their feet. But brutes weren't elites.
Estimate 10 minutes before that ascent car is loaded to capacity,
Linda said. Fred had to think fast, or failing that, just to act. No. He resisted that impulse. Better to figure this out, at least tactically, before he had his team rush in.
We could take a dozen brutes,
Will said. Linda could snipe them.
We could move in and engage one at a time.
Too slow,
Fred told him.
And they'd send for reinforcements. The ascent car could be on its way up the stalk before we could get to it.
Linda moved her aim from side to side.
Got a parking lot? Warthogs, trucks, APCs. A gasoline tanker truck.
Fred and Will exchanged a glance.
It's an old-school rebel, Fred murmured, but I like it.
Linda, make a hole.
Will, you introduce that tanker to the Scarab. I'll secure the ascent car.
You two meet me after the bang.
He took a deep breath, recalling how tough these monsters were.
They use auto-grenade launchers, he told them. And they're too strong and tough to engage in close quarters. Try for the headshot. At range.
Roger that, Will said.
Linda's green status light winked on in reply. She was entering her sniper icy cold state of zen no thought. Fred nodded to Will and they ran in opposite directions along the edge of the brush. Fred stopped when he was a kilometer from Linda's position, and then he sent his green status signal. A moment later, Will's status burned green. Fred rechecked his assault rifle, his extra magazines, and then tensed, preparing to run. A patrol of three brutes moved along the edge of the facility. They were smart, keeping to the shadows, glancing back and forth, sniffing. There were three distant coughs, three splashes of blood, and three brutes, each missing their right eye and a fair portion of their ugly face, crumpled. There was no warning light from Linda, so she had no additional targets in sight. She'd soon reposition higher to get a better view. This was Fred's opening. He sprinted to the base and ducked around the corner of a warehouse, nearly bumping into a brute running toward his position. It towered over him, covered in thick slabs of muscle and dull blue rhino-like hide. Fred fired without thinking, a full auto burst, dead center of mass. The brute rushed him, unfazed. Fred stepped into the beast's charge, striking at his thick neck with the butt of his rifle. It connected. The brute reeled back and roared. Fred unloaded the remaining rounds in his magazine into the brute's open mouth. The brute snarled, a mouthful of shattered, smoldering teeth, and took two steps toward Fred and fell. Fred reflexively reloaded his MA5B and slowed his breathing. He grabbed the brute's blade-tipped RPG. His motion tracker should have picked the brute up. Maybe his recent saltwater dunking and ice encrustation had caused a problem in the Mjolnir's system. Fred rebooted his tracker. It flickered and then showed five enemy contacts moving fast in his direction. This could get more complicated. He heard the rumble of a diesel engine, turned, and saw the blur of an 18-wheel tanker crashing through the gate and guardhouse. Will was about to make things very hot. Fred ran, hugging the walls of the warehouse. He turned the next corner and watched a fireball envelop the 55-meter-tall Scarab Walker. The tanker truck crushed under 1 foot. The Scarab ignited, its board rector breached, spewing white-blue plasma down the streets, turning asphalt to flame and melting steel-clad buildings. Will's status light flickered green. Fred moved toward the orbital elevator dead ahead. Nestled in the center of the tower support, nanowire cables stretched to anchor points from 100 meters to kilometers distant, and lines of elevator cars waited in a queue. The cars were usually loaded by crane and rail with fiberglass cargo pods. Today, however, three brutes wrestled crates into the car, secured them with ropes, and protected them with styrofoam wedges. Fred shook his head, as if those nukes would go off if jostled. You could set a bomb off in there, and their hardened cases would barely be scratched. Without the detonator codes, those older nukes were no more dangerous than paperweights. The brutes entered the car and started to force the wide door shut. Fred flashed his green status light to Will and Linda. He couldn't wait. He had to stop those brutes now, before they rolled up the stalk, out of reach. He slung his assault rifle and hefted his captured grenade launcher. He fired two projectiles arced into the elevator. Fred sprinted for the car and its closing doors. Detonations flashed inside. Fred jumped, twisted sideways, scraping through the slight space between the doors. He landed, rolled to his feet, and saw the open, mawed expressions of the three stunned brutes. He leveled his rifle and shot one in the face. Fred turned as the other blinked and charged him. He blasted it point-blank between the eyes. The brute bowled him over, and its fists came down in twin hammer blows that stunned Fred and drained his shield to a quarter charge. Blood streamed from its snarling face, and then it finally registered the rounds that had penetrated its thick skull.
It toppled upon Fred inert. The last brute pulled the body off and pointed a grenade launcher at Fred's faceplate. Fred's rifle was missing. He tried to shake off the disorientation from the double knockout blow. His head felt like it was filled with biofoam. The brute seemed to grin. Two soft puffs sounded. The brute stiffened and collapsed to the deck, a pair of holes spraying blood from the base of its head. Shadows crossed the slight opening between the doors. Will and Linda slipped inside. Will moved straight to the car's manual override panel. Linda's sniper rifle still smoldered. "Company's coming fast," she said, and then shot each brute once more. "I hope this car can still move." Fred regained his senses. The inside of the car was a mess. The grenades had busted every crate and punched rents into the walls. A dozen conical warheads lay scattered but intact on the deck. Fred took a position by the door and looked out. Three Wraith tanks crushed a path through the complex, heading their way. In the sky, Banshee flyers circled.
"Here."
Fred dug into his satchel and handed Will the ONI datapad. Will booted the intrusion software and cut through the elevator's control software.
"Hang on," he said. "Maximum acceleration."
The climbing motors engaged, and high-frequency screams rattled the car.
"Ah,
the clutch," Will noted and pressed a button. A jolt of upward acceleration hit. Fred, Linda, and Will dropped to all fours, and the car groaned and pinged. Fred rolled over and looked out the open doors. The ground dropped away. The Wraith tanks looked like toys. Would they fire on the stalk, or would they gather forces and follow them with another car?
"Will,"
he said,
"I'm on it."
Will returned to the override panel.
"Interfacing with stalk control. Jamming the sequency tracks. That should slow them down."
Linda eased next to Fred by the open doors. She set a tiny satellite dish down, and it opened like a rosebud.
"Getting a UNSC network handshake," she reported.
"Ray CENTCOM," Fred told her.
"Tell them we need an extreme low-orbit extraction. We'll need a fast ship to get in before those Covenant ships at the top can..."
"Stand by," Linda said.
"FleetCOM contacting us."
She turned to Fred. "It's Lord Hood on Cairo Station." Lord Hood's unshakably confident voice came over the comm.
"Give me a status update, Blue Team."
"Sir,"
Fred answered.
"Covenant forces at the COE were after the mothballed nukes being shuttled up to the fleet. We've recovered 12 Fenris warheads. We are en route to low orbit on the stalk. There's an entire company of brutes on the ground with Wraith tanks and Banshee reinforcements."
Fred craned his head skyward. Along the arc of Earth, distant sparks and lines of fire traced patterns of destruction. Long smoking trails plummeted to the ground, ending in thermal blooms of impacted ships and plasma bombardment. The broken hulls of UNSC ships made a boneyard of the thermosphere. There were Covenant ships in orbit as well, many more than Fred remembered. Dozens. He increased magnification directly overhead.
"There are two Covenant destroyers at the elevator's terminus near Station Wayward Rest."
"I'll send a prowler for an ELO extraction," Lord Hood said. "Get your team ready."
There was an uncharacteristic hesitation, and then he said in a lowered voice,
"One more thing has come up. A message from Dr. Catherine Halsey, and new mission."
Fred, Linda, and Will looked at one another.
"Dr. Halsey's message," Lord Hood explained, "was piggybacked on a carrier signal sent by Cortana through slipspace. The message was subsequently detected by Pluto Slipstream Space Monitoring Station Democritus. It will make more sense if you heard and read the material. Set to encryption scheme 37.
Fred called up his encryption codes. 37 corresponded to code word Sheep in Wolf's Clothing. He input the code.
"Ready to receive, sir,"
Fred told him. Cortana's message played. The Spartans listened to her automated distress on the new Halo threat and the Flood. John had been with her. There were no specific details other than the single mention of him and the Forerunner ship.
Lord Hood had to be sending them as backup.
But then, Dr. Halsey's text message appeared, explaining the discovery of new Forerunner technologies and the possibility of capturing and using them to neutralize both Covenant and Flood threats. Fred reread the message. There was no mention of Kelly. His eyes lingered on the last line. Send Spartans. He now understood why Dr. Halsey had left them, although not her reckless disregard of mission protocol. She'd followed some clues found in the ruins of Reach, or perhaps within the alien blue crystal. It was a high-risk venture that had, luckily, paid off. If she'd discovered a cache of technology, it could turn the tide of this war. Fred held up his hands, palms up, and gave a slight shrug to his teammates, soliciting their opinions. Linda nodded. Will gave the thumbs-up sign.
We understand, sir, Fred replied. And we're ready for redeployment. This Onyx system, though.
He rechecked the stellar coordinate embedded in the message.
It's weeks away with the fastest UNSC Corvette.
We'll just have to do our best, Lord Hood said.
The Pony Express stands ready and waiting for your team. They'll jump the instant you board. I'll send reinforcements if we can spare them.
Fred leaned out the elevator doors. Outside, blue skies had turned to black and untwinkling stars now surrounded them. He squinted. In medium orbit were sleek Covenant destroyers, so much faster than any human ship.
Sir, he said, I think I've found us a better way there. But I'm going to need the detonation codes for these Fenris warheads.